I'm looking through you. Where did you go?
November 11th, 1965. John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr are in London's EMI studios at Abbey Road, finishing up the sessions that would yield the Rubber Soul album.
I'm looking through you. You're not the same.
They're doing again what they had been doing consistently since 1962, writing magnificently catchy pop classics about romantic love and recording them under deadline pressure in their standard four-musician lineup of two guitars, bass, and percussion. On this last marathon day in the studio, they've written and recorded Girl and You Won't See Me, and the last thing they do is to lay down final vocals on Paul McCartney's I'm Looking Through You. In December of 1965, the Beatles perform a few shows in Scotland and England, break for the holidays, and then they do something they'd done very little of since Beatlemania exploded in 1963 in England and 1964 in the U.S. They took some time off.
This was the first time they'd ever had a chance to stop and smell the roses.
Mark Lewisohn wrote the Beatles Recording Sessions book and is working on a comprehensive three-volume history of the band.
They were going to be making their next film, but they couldn't decide what that film would be. And as a consequence, the period of time they had allotted for the film, which was the first 3 months of 1966, ended up being time off. And it was also a time, of course, when they were beginning to consume substances which were not entirely legal.
So when the Beatles did return to the studio in early April of 1966, the first thing they record is something that seems more than just 4 months away from the boy-girl pop of their last day in the studio in November of 1965. It seemed light years away. Again, Mark Lewisohn.
The consequence of having time off and stretching their mind somewhat was the fact that they really started to become creative in a different way. They were no longer writing under pressure of a deadline. They were writing because a song would pop up. And they had time to hone those songs, and they had equipment at home. They were, in essence, the product of relaxed thought. And this was something they had never had time for before.
Take one of a track the Beatles labeled Mark One on the tape box. The song's name would change, and plenty more would be added to this skeleton in the weeks to come as the Beatles laid down tracks for the album that would come to be called Revolver.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Welcome to Everything Was Right, the Beatles Revolver.
Let me tell you how it will be.
I'm Paul Ingles, one of many voices you'll hear today exploring what it was that made this particular album by the most influential rock band in music history, the Beatles, so remarkable. When critics and fans are asked to rate the top rock albums of all time, Revolver often grabs the top slot and is always in the top tier. Our panel of music writers, musicians, and Beatle fans will help us explain why as we tour every track on the full-length British release, along with a single issued from these same recording sessions. Let's preview the tracks while I introduce you to our guests.
Paperback writer.
Singer-songwriter Deborah Holland is from Los Angeles.
Though it's completely scratched, it's the only 45 that I've kept all these years, and I still get a little tingle in my spine whenever I hear the song.
Rain, as with Tomorrow Never Knows, shows Lennon musing over psychedelic philosophy.
That's Jim DeRogatis, pop music critic for the Chicago Sun-Times. And this is public radio DJ Scott McNichol.
Taxman had a little bit more of a crunch to it, I thought, too. A little more punch on the guitar. It wasn't so much chimey. It was George was kind of making a statement, a little bit heavier, if you will.
Look at all the lovely people. Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been.
Father McKenzie and Eleanor Rigby, these two people, inextricably bound somehow, but you never really find out why.
Massachusetts singer-songwriter Mark Arely there, and Texas-based singer-songwriter Christy Krueger here.
I don't know what was up with I'm Only Sleeping. Almost has like a klezmer influence in the dun 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 dun.
When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yawning.
Leslie Samuels Healy calls herself a Beatles superfan.
What I remember most about it, hearing it, you know, as a new album, was how different, what different directions John, Paul, and George were going.
John Spurney is a musician from New York City.
To me, Here, There, and Everywhere is a song that it felt a little wimpy to me when I first heard it. But when I started sort of playing music seriously and dissecting it, it's just an incredibly well-crafted song.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
Yellow Submarine is a childlike song that is sort of profoundly psychedelic without having any overt psychedelic qualities to it.
That's David Gans, a musician who lives in the Bay Area of California. And this is author Stuart Maedow.
It wasn't only the meaning of words, and Lennon talked to Dylan about this. It was how the sound of words came out.
She said, you don't understand what I said. I said, no, 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 you're wrong.
To be able to go out and, you know, feel the sun on your face, it's just a pretty uplifting feeling, and that I think that song kind of captures that essence.
That's author Jeff Sobel, and this is author Steve Turner.
I think And Your Bird Can Sing is a great, great song. I can never understand why John dismissed it, because it's kind of mysterious, because you don't know what he's singing about.
Singer-songwriter Sean Colvin is from Austin, Texas.
When you talk about an album like Revolver and you list those songs like that, that's one record, and it's outrageous.
Los Angeles musician and writer Richard Goldman.
For No One is a beautiful Paul song, but it's also interestingly recorded by George Martin, possibly the most respected record producer in all of England. He can just ring up the most respected London Philharmonic horn player and say, could you come on down?
And in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears cried for no one. A love that should have lasted years.
Being my friend, I said you called back a robber.
John Leventhal is a musician and record producer from New York City.
I remember the first time I listened to it, I was a little thrown by it. But then I remember on the third listening, I remember thinking like how great it was.
I want to tell you, my head is filled with things to say.
Again, Mark Lewisohn. Besides the surviving Beatles and George Martin, the one man on earth who's heard every scrap of tape from the Beatles archive.
He got these brass players in from Georgie Fame's Blue Flames, and Paul got them in, and they recorded this great brass sound for Gotta Get You Into My Life, and it just elevated it.
Gotta get you into my life.
And then everyone wants to talk about Tomorrow Never Knows.
It was the most extraordinary Beatles track that we'd ever heard at that point.
You have these sounds of what sound like backwards bird calls.
The drumming of Ringo Starr, it's probably his best drumming.
This was phenomenal. This was literally phenomenal. This was a new kind of rock music.
Weren't we lucky?
On our program today, we'll be visiting each of those 16 songs in much more detail, deconstructing them lyrically, sonically, talking about how some of them influenced pop and rock music to come. Musician, writer, and radio producer David Gans.
Nobody could do everything the Beatles were doing, but people could grab a piece of it and run with it and go somewhere with it and make their own thing of it. And the Beatles did indeed give everybody a license to experiment. They tried everything. And they used unexpected chords, and they used unexpected rhythm changes, and they used unexpected instrumental participation. They adapted and synthesized from a million different places and invented stuff completely out of thin air. And they made it all work. And they made it all so incredibly inspiring that an entire generation of people felt new possibilities on Earth because of what they did.
The Beatles gave their fans a hint of the challenging material that was on the way when they released a single in the spring from their 1966 Abbey Road sessions. We'll start there in a moment. When Everything Was Right, The Beatles' Revolver continues from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Paul Ingalls.